Translation. O lotus-eyed Lord, as baby birds that have not yet developed their wings, always look for their mother to return and feed them. As small calves tied with ropes await anxiously the time of milking, when they will be allowed to drink the milk of their mothers, or as a morose wife whose husband is away from home always longs for him to return and satisfy her. In all respects, I always yearn for the opportunity to render direct service unto you. Namaum Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhuta. I forgot the purport. A pure devotee always yearns to associate personally with the Lord and render service unto him. The examples given in this regard are most appropriate. A small bird is practically never satisfied, except when the mother bird comes to feed it. A small calf is not satisfied unless allowed to suck the milk from the mother's udder. And a chaste, devoted wife whose husband is away from home is never satisfied until she has the association of her beloved husband. This is a prayer by Ritasura, who externally looked like a demon, but who was actually internally the total opposite of a demon. He was a great devotee, Maharaj Chitraketu actually. But due to a curse, he had to go through a life which was apparently opposed to Lord Krishna's will. He challenged the mighty Devatas. A battle ensued in which he quickly gained the overhand because he could expand his size and fight with magic. And finally, in utter desperation, Indra approached him for a single combat. He took his powerful thunderbolt, which up to then was an unfailing weapon, to kill him, but Vritasura just took it, hit Airavata, the carrier of Indra, and threw him back, and laughed and laughed and laughed. And then he turned. He said, "Please kill me now." Indra thought, "What? This is another demoniac trick." And then Vritasura revealed his heart. He revealed his intense yearning actually to go back home, back to Godhead. And he, one of his, the revelations of his heart is explained here. We find a very important verse, and you will see at a moment how this verse will appear in a total different context. It will no longer be in the battle of appear in the battle of Vritasura fighting against Indra. All of a sudden, in a moment, this verse will appear in the battle of your own life. As you struggle for Krishna consciousness, remain alert. It might change your life. This is called dramatic speaking in order to keep a tired audience awake. So let us hear the verse again. The verse expresses yearning or longing or hankering, or you could say eagerness, to render direct service to Lord Krishna. I will read it again to you. It will, O lotus-eyed Lord, I always yearn for the opportunity to render direct service unto you. My situation is like that of a baby bird, baby birds that have not yet developed their wings, and who always look for their mother to return and feed them. This is my situation. Or I could be compared to small calves tied with ropes down and who await anxiously the time of milking when they will be allowed to drink the milk of their mothers. This is my situation. Or I could be also compared to a morose wife who has whose husband is away from home and who always longs for him to return and satisfy her in all respects. In much the same way as the baby birds who hanker for the mothers, the small calf who wishes to drink milk from the udder of the mother, and therefore yearns for the mother, and as the morose wife who also wants to reach, wants that the husband comes in, back into her life. In the same way, I yearn to render direct service to you. Hare Krishna. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that a devotee who wishes to chant the holy name needs to adopt the mentalities given in this verse. And here this verse now leaves the Puranic history and comes into our life 2006. We need to chant if we wish full success in chanting with full attention, avoiding the offenses. But we also need to have a positive orientation or a positive spirit in our chanting of the holy name. There is a very, very important secret in chanting, which I've heard many a few years ago, and when I was revealed this when this secret was revealed to my life totally changed, and also my relationship to the holy name. Srila Prabhupada writes that you can chant the holy name and the holy name is not present. That is possible. It is done when a devotee chants only the external letter combinations of the holy name, and there is no devotional spirit in his chanting. This spirit is really what attracts Krishna to come and enter your or come on your tongue. The divine sound of the holy name must have its origin beyond the area of misconception or maya. The sound must have its origin in Goloka Vrindavan. And please listen now. The mere physical sound is not the holy name of Krishna. Repeating only the syllables of the holy name is called mayik sound. It has no spiritual essence. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, in order to illustrate this, gives us the example of a capsula which has inside the medicine. You know why the capsula has the medicine? Because then you can swallow the pulver-like medicine and it comes down your pipe into the stomach, and there it dissolves. If the medicine would not have this protective capsula, it would dissolve maybe in the throat area or chest area, but then it could not display its efficiency. It has to go into the stomach, and some medicines have capsulas which take care that the medicine only dissolves when it comes into the intestines. Now, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur makes a point. The capsula itself is not the medicine. Externally, one capsule may look like another, but within one capsule there may be medicine, and within another there may be cyanide. Do you know what is cyanide? It's a very, very heavy, deadly poison. If you only take a tip of a nail and you have it on your tongue, then goodbye, Gadadhar Pandit. You have to die now. This is what is cyanide. So the capsula itself is not the medicine. It is not, and now the analogy is described, it is not the sound of Krishna's name that is Krishna. Krishna is within the sound. The holy name must be surcharged with the proper spirit, not any mundane sentiment. You will find this as a carefully protected secret in Prabhupada's teachings, in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's teachings, and in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's teachings, that the spirit must be there so that Krishna is attracted. He is not attracted if the proper devotional spirit of rendering service is absent. Let us explore this subject, which is so absolutely important, a little further by listening to a purport of Srila Prabhupada. He says, everything spiritual and material depends on one's mental condition. And he gives an example. People generally go to the Ganges to be purified of the effects of sinful life. But here's an example of how foolish persons, these were the sons of Kuvera, entered the Ganges to become involved in sinful life. I do not know if you have heard this amazing scandal. They actually came with 10 undressed ladies to the Ganga, and they drank strongly intoxicating wine, for underwater sex. I do not wish to tell more. It is such a scandal. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada continues, it is not that everyone becomes purified by entering the Ganges. Everything, spiritual and material, depends on one's mental condition. Do you know that an estimated amount of 1,013 prostitutes enters every morning the Ganga in Calcutta to take a bath? And do you think afterwards they will chant japa? No. They go in a business-like intention into the Ganga. They want to cleanse their bodies after a night of hard work, and then they are ready to work again. So they don't get purified because they do have a certain mental condition which is not proper. Everything spiritual and material depends on one's mental condition. So in this verse now we learn the mental condition necessary for chanting. You live in a town and there you don't see it, but in springtime, at least maybe in Central Park you can see it. There are these birds who are in the nests and who cry for their mothers. And as they open their mouth, you can only see the redness of the mouth. You cannot see anything else in the nest. They so intensely want the presence of their mother. It's amazing. It's really amazing. This is the first example of intense longing. The second example is well known to Panchagoda Prabhu from his Vrindavan time. It's the examples of calves who want to drink the milk from the udders. You know, in Vrindavan, the farmers bring the calves at the milking time towards the cows, and then they have the first drink. And then, as they are just drinking, the mother feels so affectionate that she's ready to give everything to that particular calf, and her milk-giving inclinations are fully aroused. And then the farmer takes away the calf and makes the cow, who has now released her locker on the milk, you know, due to her affection for the calf. And then when the right amount of milk is still left in the udder, they bring the calf again and let the calf drink the rest. It's a very economical art of taking the milk from the cow, because the cow will give in this way everything it can freely produce, new, and so on. But the calves, you should see them as they are standing maybe 3 meters away from the mother cow. Panchagoda, you must have seen, they have a little tiny rope around here. They really want to go, and they really strain. There's a really good example of intense longing. And the last example, which is increasing in intensity and also in significance. Because, see, the first example was an example of a calf, some very selfish longing. The bird is just sitting there and just, come, and bring me my food. Now the second example is a little better, because here the calf moves forward towards the mother. It's not as selfish, so to say. It is a little bit more active and willing. And the third example is that of a morose wife who really yearns that her husband returns to greet him and satisfy him in all respects, and then derive satisfaction from this also. You know, the wife will wait, and then I was joking I gave this class a few times already, and I was joking. She would make a swing ready for her husband, and when the husband would come, she would place him on the swing and swing him to relieve the tension from travel, because this movement is very good to relieve mental and some physical tension as well. So here, this is a little better, because she really wants to do some service. And here, in this verse, it says, that this is my spirit. I also want to follow the example of the baby birds and the calves and the wife, and I always yearn for the opportunity to render direct service unto you. Mm-hmm. Today Yajna Purusha has led us in praying, make me a follower of the cowherd damsels. You know, this it points a little towards that area of spontaneous devotional service. Yes, but we will not go now in this direction. We will go into another direction. And that is that I feel it's very, very important for a movement like ours, which is in the process of growth and maturation, to understand this point, which is somehow a little not so often mentioned. See, Prabhupada writes about this spirit, huh? The whole process of spiritual culture. I feel this very interesting when a sentence starts, the whole process of spiritual culture, because now, yes, the whole process of spiritual culture, we are alerted, now something very fundamental will follow. The whole process of spiritual culture is aimed at eating more prasadam. I'm sorry, I was a little unconcentrated when I looked at some of your hungry bellies. Listen, the whole process of spiritual culture is aimed okay, I have your attention, so I can say what it is. The whole process of spiritual culture is aimed at changing the heart of the living being in his relation of servitude to the Lord. It is expected by all means, so it means this must happen now, that by discharging regulated devotional service, one must manifest the change of heart. If there is no such change, the heart must be considered steel-framed, for it is not melted, even when there is chanting of the holy name of the Lord. So you hear of a devotee who chants the holy name of the Lord, but nothing is happening. Wow, this sounds so dramatic. It's like the end of the world. It's, what is it?
Fire engine.
Oh, it's for two or three people, the end of the world, so it's justified. So here we hear of someone who is actually following the chanting, but he seems to not have any progress. His heart is not melted, even when there is chanting of the holy name of the Lord. If the change does not take place, even after continuous hearing and chanting of the holy name, it may be considered to be due to offenses only. That is the opinion of the Sandhava. Srila Prabhupada says this. Srila Prabhupada has said, you know, there must be a change in the heart as you chant. Otherwise you can chant and chant and chant and chant and chant and bloop, because you have no experience. Bloop is a German word, maybe, or is it an English word? It means go away from the process. Bloop. Yeah. So, You might have heard Prabhupada's article on chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. I believe the older devotees have heard, but maybe the younger have not yet heard. And there Srila Prabhupada is saying what is the right attitude. He says, the chanting must be done in the spirit of a child who cries for the mother. It's a similar mood as we have heard from this Bhagavatam shloka. So, about this type of crying, you know, we will now hear a verse, two verses, which, as I said, shocked me and changed my own understanding of chanting. It actually says, while you chant, you should cry. Now, I know that in the Western culture, this crying is something which is not modern in public. I do remember in Germany, devotees told me there was a political conference, and someone who was known to the politicians had just died, and then the different politicians were speaking about this person. They interrupted the conference, and they had one Japanese the prime minister or something, or president, a high-ranking politician, who also knew that person who had died. And when he went before the camera, he just couldn't speak. He just cried. And he didn't try to hide it. It was, for him, it was acceptable, as in our culture, laughing is acceptable. You know, he just cried. He really cried, and he just didn't feel anything. Cultural habits are really very dependent on time and culture. In India, for instance, it is not at all considered impolite to belch after the meal. Because, yes, this is a part of life. It means full satisfaction. It's a compliment, actually, to the host. Maybe not in all ranks of society, or is it?
In more traditional, I think in modern times they have adapted
Western. Yeah, the more traditional, you can just go bang, and it means a compliment. Even in German times, Martin Luther, he would say after a meal it is only polite to sufficiently belch. You know, if you don't belch, something wrong? Was the meal not properly cooked, or did we not extend our full hospitality to you? In modern times, things change, and the crying is really done in a hidden situation. Not encouraged, but listen what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaks. He says, Bhakti Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Bhakti Yoga. It's three times the same word means he will now say something important about it. Bhakti Yoga Dhana. Bhakti e Krishna nama smarana krandana. Krandana means crying. Devotional service is the greatest treasure. Devotional service means crying while remembering Krishna's names. Krishna bali kandile, se Krishna name mile. Dhana kul kicho nahi, Krishna na bhajile. The pure name of Krishna manifests when one cries while chanting the name of Krishna. Wealth and high birth are useless if one does not worship Krishna. So this crying is now defined in the purport by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I believe it is highly interesting for us to hear who might have some reservation, but I should chant so feelingly. Without the service of Krishna, high birth with material prestige and opulence says are simply insignificant. When a prideless person repeatedly calls out the name of Krishna with a melted heart and realizes that the name of Krishna and Krishna himself are non-different, he attains the eternal service of the holy name. You know, you need to be free from ego. That is another way of saying free from offenses, because the egos do come, the offenses come out of ego. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's analysis. So when you are prideless and you repeatedly call the holy name of Krishna with a melted heart, then you can attain the eternal service of the holy name. You have reached that level where you feel just so moved as you chant. Now, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wouldn't be Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur if he would now not caution us to not get into false tears. And he does so. Persons afflicted by false ego who cry out of material distress do not attain devotional service. You know, that's somehow this material self-centered crying. The inclination for devotional service manifests only in the melted heart of prideless persons. The crying out of distress born of dominating the material world or losing such domination is not intended here. Let me say it a little bit more in simple English. You know, mostly we cry because we are frustrated. Something didn't work out. A plan didn't work out. We were not recognized very politely, and as a result, yes, we now feel it's time to be frustrated, and we cry. But here this is something else. It doesn't have to do with the hurt ego or the blown up ego. The idea here is it has to do with yearning for Krishna. I'm looking now at the watch. It is 12 minutes before 8, and I will want to finish the lecture at 8, and I just got an idea. There's much more to come in this lecture, but this lecture can have a second part
tomorrow.
And we could now open the forum for questions if you so desire on this subject, and then we can with your kind questions and your kind input, we can explore it a little bit more for a few more minutes, and then we shall tomorrow come to the other part of the lecture. Yagya Purusha Prabhu.
So Maharaj, you just gave the analogy of the Ganges, that it depends on the consciousness of the person who goes inside to take the bath, and same is with the chanting also. So it really depends on the consciousness with which you chant. So then, are we making it spiritual? Are we making the holy name spiritual? Or is it by our consciousness that the Ganges becomes sacred?
Very good question. Is it a placebo effect? Did you understand Yagya Purusha's? So our consciousness determines the result that do we make a spiritual life something which we make up with our consciousness. Thank you very much for this important question, necessary question. Atasi Krishna Namadi Nabhavet Grayam Indriyai Sevanmuke Hijivado Swayam Eva Spuratyada. The dull material senses cannot fathom the Lord. Also not the dull mind. It's one of the senses. The Lord becomes revealed to someone who is purifying, who has purified his senses. So we don't make things up. We couldn't make up spiritual things with our mind, consciousness, our thoughts, our attitudes, and so on. But when we have a mentality of eagerness, we show the Lord that we are not indifferent to his revelation. In fact, we do call about his we call him, and then he might, if he so desires, reveal himself. In towards the end of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Parikshit Maharaj encourages his mother Uttara. He says, I will soon leave. I am bound to die. And he encourages her to now go to Mathura and to the association of devotees, and thereby show the Lord that she wants the mercy of the Lord and is not indifferent. And then the Lord may reveal himself. So when you go into a consciousness and into the holy name, where you lovingly pray to the Lord, and where you think of the Lord in a service, not in a dominating spirit, but in a subordinate position, then the Lord will become attracted to you, and he reveals himself. But if you have a consciousness where you just don't think of the Lord, or versa, you are offensive to him, you are, then the Lord will not reveal himself. The thing is in revelation, actually. We Krishna devotees theologically believe in revelation. That the Lord can reveal himself to the purified senses. And we keep our sadhana in such a way that our senses are purified, but ultimately we are expecting the Lord to reveal himself. I mean, not expecting, begging the Lord. That would be my answer to this. It's a very good question. Thank you very much.
Could you just say something towards this? So in other words, what you're saying is a relation, is our personalities, what do you mean, even the Ganges.
Mm-hmm.
And so just like if I would know somebody's coming towards me, but it's not really serious or honest, I'm not going to, they can come, I might...
Yeah.
Facilitate a little bit, but I'm not
going to
reveal myself to this person.
Yes, that it's a person. It is really a personal subject. This becomes very clear in Madhurya Kadambini, where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur analyzes the offenses against the holy name, and then he says, when a devotee is offensive, the Lord will not reveal himself to the devotee, and he gives the example of a master who has an aggressive servant. The master might maintain him a little bit, just so that he doesn't starve. Maybe a small portion of khichdi he gets. But so the same way, also someone who chants in with offenses, the Lord is a little patient, and hopes that he soon comes to Namabhas, where he tries to avoid the offenses but he doesn't reveal himself. That servant is kept outside. He cannot come inside and do any personal service because he produces pain in the heart of the master. Pain, you know, and therefore he's not let in. There's no revelation of the master's qualities. He just throws some scraps outside, or have someone throw some scraps outside. I would like your question. We will park it here, and in a second we will visit it. My English is not very good. I will call upon you in a second. Your question, I will try to answer in a second. Mm-hmm. But I want to just say on this point, my dear devotees, this is such a profound subject matter, and tomorrow we will hear more quotations on this. Where this enters, or where this subject brings us, it is to the question, is Krishna consciousness an automatic process in the sense of, that you enter a lift and automatically you are brought up without your own effort to the sixth or seventh story? It brings us to this question, really. Can I just do my sadhana in any way and it will bring me to love of Krishna? Or do I have to do something which changes my consciousness? This is a question where it brings us to. It's a very essential question. And I believe it is due to this that in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, a devotee can definitely count on the Agyata Sukriti factor. He has to does something and he gets the benefit, although he doesn't really know what he's doing and so on. But as he matures, he must certainly come out of the ignorant position. That's why there's so much reading of scriptures, so much instructions and direction, because as he grows, he must know about these processes. So much surrender. Hare Krishna. So we had our devotee. You gave your good name, please, Prabhu. Dwarkadish Prabhu. Please say your question.
We see that some devotees, they practice a very strict sadhana, 20, 30 years, some even 40, more. And their heart does not change. And as you say, it's due to offenses. So they don't get the revelation.
Mm-hmm.
Now my question is, for a devotee that has been following the strict sadhana for so many years, it apparently is understood that he doesn't even understand what offenses he's creating, because he's constantly doing the same thing wrong year after year. How does he get to the point where he understands that he's creating certain offenses and how to stop them?
Thank you very much, Dwarkadish, for this wonderful question. I want to raise another question. How do I know that I please Krishna? Good question, I think. Don't worry me. I have your question in mind. It's only this question which we are dealing with. That is your question. We know that we are serving Krishna, or pleasing Krishna through our spiritual master or other devotees who are showing this, you know, yasya prasada bhagavat prasada, or you must please Krishna through his servants. And the servants can tell you, really, they can mirror back to you that what you, where you are in your spiritual life. And the servants of the Lord will tell this to the devotee who is maybe, you know, due to a certain ignorance or due to certain patterns in his psychology. Let us not forget, devotees also have certain, maybe from our childhood, some strange patterns are still there. The devotees will mirror it back to that devotee. That's why devotional sangha is so absolutely important. That's why we want to flee the devotees when we don't want this mirroring effect on our... We want to be alone. We say, these devotees don't know, and so on. But when we want to see where we are, we like to go to people who are in the same spiritual, so to say, wavelengths, let us say it in modern New York English. They are on the same wavelengths. They are on, and they are able really to give us a proper mirroring, because they know where we are, they can see it. So when the devotee association is so important to avoid the dilemma which you have presented, or the observation, it's a very important thing. I also have another answer, oh Krishna, Dvarakadish, which we will speak about tomorrow.